set.
You're listening to
The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time. The Antioch Podcast.
The Antioch Podcast is a ministry of Preach System.
Oh, I got Jesus, yay.
Hello, welcome to the Antioch Podcast, Conversations about Biblical Anti-Racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. This week on the Antioch Podcast, our team had a conversation with spiritual director Josh Banner. Josh is a spiritual director working with all kinds of people, including people experiencing incarceration near his home in Holland, Michigan. Josh spent an hour talking with us about contemplation, spiritual direction, and social justice. You can find out more about Josh by listening to his podcast, The Invitation, wherever fine podcasts can be found. Let's go now and listen to this conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Antioch Podcast, where we have conversations about biblical anti-racism. So glad that you are here today to spend some time with us. We're super excited today because we have a special guest, and we'll reveal who that guest is in just a moment. As our usual practice, we're going to introduce ourselves so you know who is around the table. We'll say our names, our racial, ethnic, gendered identities, and then we will answer the question of the day. I'll get us started. Hello, my name is Michelle, and I identify as an African-American woman. And the question of the day is, if you could have an endless supply of one thing, what would you pick and why? I've got lots of things going on in my head. If I could have an endless supply, there's a part of me, so I'm going to pull a Susie here. There's a part of me that says, I want an endless supply of money. Then I could fund all the things that I wanted to fund. And that's really what I would do. I would fund so many things. I would take one world-class vacation, and I would have one big blowout vegan meal that would convince everybody that they want to be vegan. That's what I would do. And then the other is, there's a part of me that says, I want an endless supply of love. But as long as my husband is alive, I'll have an endless supply of love. So, you know.
That was good.
I like that.
Uh-huh. So I'll just keep him and ask for the money.
I hope Daryl's listening.
I know what you mean.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh dear. How about Libby? How about you?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Libby. I am a white woman. My pronouns are she, her, and now I feel a little, mine is an endless supply of gummy peach rings.
All right.
Because they're delicious.
Wow.
But maybe I should pick world peace, I guess.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool. Oh, Jane, how about you?
My name is Jane Bruin, and I identify as a Pakistani Punjabi American woman or Asian American woman. And I had money on my list, but I will take that off because I knew somebody was going to say that.
And Michelle will probably share it with us.
Yes,
that's right.
I would actually pay you all. That's what I would do. Pay you all.
So it's between two things. One is energy, and the other is patience that I don't have to earn. Like, I don't have to go through hard things to get patience, but an endless supply of patience would be great.
That's good.
You want the fruit of the spirit with no watering.
Yes, that's what I want. Hand sanitizer also on the list.
Susie, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm Susie Dixon, and I identify as a Puerto Rican and Italian woman. And my endless supply of one thing is going to be time without aging.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
time. I'm surprised
with that answer for you.
Yeah, more time. Why? Tell me. What do you think?
Well,
I think
it's not the more time. It's the time without aging. Mm. It's the without aging part that surprises me.
Yeah, because if I can have time, let's say an extra 48 hours this week, I don't want to age as I have the time. I just want to age naturally. Have you ever seen those movies where somebody has time, but then they're aging while they're going through it? I want time without the aging. It has nothing to do with looks, but I have seen the body age, and that's what it comes down to. I've seen how the body deteriorates, and I want to be healthy and strong as I have more time. But I know this is all a fantasy.
It's all fantasy, right? But tomorrow, if I wake up and have an endless supply of money.
Yes. I was also going to say, I think Susie already has time without aging, but I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe I do a little bit.
And Eric, how about you?
Hi, my name is Eric. I identify as a white man. And the thing that I wish I had an endless supply of would be hope. I thought about the money one. I got to say, it would be fun to be an endowment, I think. But if you had an endless supply of hope, I think it wouldn't matter about the money because you'd just keep trying and you wouldn't give up so fast. And that's the thing that I wish I had more of. I wish I had more hope. So I wish everybody had more hope. So
yeah.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That is.
Because there were times this summer with going through family things, I honestly did not know how to hope. It was so distant.
Yep.
So hope is a really good one. Mm-hmm.
I felt it in myself when I lose hope that like you go in a dark place. And as a therapist, I watch people, and when they lose hope, even just for a moment, it's like they take themselves out of the equation. And I'm like, man, I see myself there. And I see people when they lose it, and it's like your energy just goes away.
Yes, 100% agree.
Well, thank you all for identifying yourselves. But as I had alluded to earlier, we have a special guest with us today. I am excited to announce that our special guest today is Mr. Joshua Banner. He's just extraordinary. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. He's just extraordinary. But he is a man of deep thought and contemplative practice, and is an advocate for social justice in a way that's definitely anything but performance. It is really a part of who he is. And when we were thinking about who are people that we would like to talk to and people we'd like to have share their stories with our listeners and beyond, I thought Josh would be a really good person to do that because he is striving to do a good work. And so, Mr. Banner, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself a little bit more and tell us, what's the one thing you wish you had an endless supply of?
Yeah.
And what do you identify as?
Yeah. I identify as a Caucasian male, 47 years old, a Holland, Michigander, musician, artist. My wife and I moved here in 2006 so that I could serve as the Minister of Music and Art at Hope College. So I was in campus ministry, recruiting and facilitating 4 worship services per week for 8.5 years. Loved the engagement with college students, getting thrust into the deep end of the pool with their life questions, getting to teach a few classes, getting to run recording studios. Amazing gift. It took a huge toll on me because I'm an introvert. I'm a pretty intense introvert. And so first I should pause and say that this, however, is like a fantasy land to be sitting here. If you guys ever dip into Enneagram vocabulary or if that's permitted, I usually try to wait to not be the first one to go to Enneagram vocabulary.
Just go for it.
Yeah, go for it. But yeah, identify as a four on the Enneagram. And if you look at the subtypes of that, I'm a social or a relational four. So It's really crazy because I'm an introvert. So it's like, I like people, but not too much. And I need to be special. So I'm feeling like incredibly special here. And this is a perfect setup to say, here's a time for you to prepare to sit down and have an intentional conversation with thoughtful people. So thank you so much for having me here. What that means for what my vocation translated into for career is towards the end of my time at Hope, crashed and burned with all the exhaustion of being on the stage all the time, and discovered the practice of spiritual direction. And I found a rare spiritual director who would meet with me weekly. And during the probably first year and a half, 2 years, I was almost, you know, at least twice, three times a month, often on the floor in tears, because I needed a space where I could talk about Jesus and God for my soul and not have to figure out how to translate this into the arts for, you know, roughly, 1,000, 1,200 college students that would come through on a voluntary chapel participation, non-compulsory. And so Hope being a Christian school and a Reformed tradition, you folks probably have a familiarity with that. And we've been wearing this this joy of having this robust chapel program that started in revival. And look, it's still continuing in revival. Right, Josh? You know, aren't you going to make sure that we sing the right songs and keep these students coming? So spiritual direction ended up becoming a deeper space where I could do all the same instinct of how to create time and space for God, but not have to plug in any instruments, not have to pick any songs, and not to even in direction place the onus on me to teach or fix or heal. I'm simply showing up to listen. So that's been my joy since I finished my training with the Dominican Sisters of Grand Rapids in 2014, and then went right into a doctorate of ministry program through Fuller in spiritual direction. And so, yeah, in 2017, I started a nonprofit we call The Invitation that supports not just the podcast, but my practice of taking spiritual direction, contemplative practice, really group listening into a prison in Muskegon. So if it weren't for the pandemic, I would be in my eighth year of going in twice a month to pray with my incarcerated brothers at E.C. Brooks Correctional Facility. But I should say, Susanna Childress, poet, who's appeared at the Calvin Festival of Faith and Writing several times, is my wife. She's a prof at Hope and Creative Writing. And then I have three kids. So my thing that I would ask for in abundant supply would be, I thought maybe energy at first, because I have some mental health challenges and struggle daily with fatigue, you know, but as I listen to that, my prayer is, no, that's actually a struggle that God gave me for a purpose. So to give me a fighting chance, an endless supply of childcare.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'd like to have it on an app too, so that like three buttons, you know, like one button is come on over and just take over. The next one is come on over and make dinner.
Oh,
and
yes.
The third one is come on over, make dinner, put the kids to bed, and bring in the massage team and the spa. Yeah. That's what I want.
Oh, you just came up with that on the fly?
No, I've been thinking about that. It's been one of my go-to jokes for a couple of years. Yeah.
Concierge babysitting, you know? That,
That would, so many people would subscribe to that.
Oh, I think it could be a business. You know, it's like the third one is like you call it the works. And you only get to hit that button once a year.
Yeah.
Just kind of wait for it. It's like tonight's the night.
Yeah.
The works. And all of a sudden there's like confetti and soothing music and the lights dim. The kids are having fun, but just not in, I love my kids dearly, but they're highly emotional, just like me.
Thank you for sharing your what propelled you into this contemplative work and the space. And so as you have discovered this practice for yourself, how meaningful it was for you, how have you invited others into this space, into this work as well? Because it seems like you found it as like, I found bread and it's warm and it's good, but I'm not going to just keep it for myself. I want others to experience it too.
Yeah, that's a great question that I wrestle with on the daily, in the sense that I would have described myself as an Enneagram four wing five. If I was, didn't struggle with ADHD, I probably would have become a career academic and maybe I'd be a full tenured prof somewhere. But as I've discovered contemplative practice in a prison, in this, what we could describe as the second half of life, I moved over to four wing three. And that means I'm all of a sudden like entrepreneurial here. Before it's like, hey, I need to be special, but don't look at me too closely because I'm so vulnerable, because you might see how much I want to be special. And it's just too hard. But then with this move over to the three, it's like, oh my gosh, I found this treasure and I'm selling everything for it. And all I want to do is talk about it constantly. And I want to invite people into this in as many different ways as I possibly can. And I feel almost like, especially ironically, after the enormity of the suffering in the last 3 years, the way that suffering has a way of clarifying what your deepest desires are, I almost feel like a real evangelical again. Like I just love Jesus. I just want to talk about Jesus. I want to talk to everybody about God. And hey, there's hope, there's possibility. Mm. And I've had a history of depression in my family. So this is really a move of God for me. It's, you know, and it's also an awkward posture as a spiritual director because I'm supposed to spend most of my time listening. So, and I do. But then when I have people call me up and say, hey, you want to do a podcast? I'm like, oh, and then I become a fire hydrant. So the practical things, I was at a CRC church for 2 years here in the north side of Holland after campus ministry, trying to translate from campus ministry to adult ministry. And to be honest, they didn't know what to do with me in the sense of I could teach classes, I could lead retreats for staff, for the adults. The adult formation in that church was just still underformed. They admitted that across the board from the elders to the pastoral team. And so they just said, hey, why don't you start a podcast? And so my podcast, the Invitation Podcast, originally was started to serve a church and to try to create a space that people could engage my guided retreats, my guided teachings and prayers in a safer way. Instead of coming to sit, there's just a lot of intimidation when you're talking about prayer. Mm-hmm. Who prays? How do you pray? Wait a minute, there's more ways to pray. What I'm behind the ball here. It gets really, it's like talking about your diet or your politics or your birth plan, you know, as a young adult. It's just very vulnerable. So that's one avenue that I continue to explore. I describe the podcast as guided prayers conversations and spiritual conversations. I also do two formation programs. The School of Prayer is a 9-month study and practice of the rule of life at the vital intersection of contemplation and justice. And then we just last year launched our first year of training spiritual directors in what we're calling the School of Contemplative Listening, which is also in that same vocabulary, a study and practice of spiritual direction at the vital intersection of contemplation and justice. So I'm always trying to invent new ways to, with the arts really, to try to connect and to make that bridge. I did a podcast a couple of years ago with a spiritual formation author that some of you might know. I know she's done some work with Calvin, Ruth Haley Barton. Mm-hmm. And in those podcasts, I was really trying to unpack this work of translation. There's some things that I've discovered both in the prison and also in the ancient prayer, spiritual theology and prayer practices that the church, quite honestly, has forgotten. And to try to reinvigorate that is not going to help to shame people into that. So how do you then create a safe way to help people imagine? It's both a rediscovery of God as well as a rediscovery of themselves and even of the world. So it's beautiful, lovely work that I am so ecstatic about, but it's much more difficult than just picking the worship songs for a bunch of college students. But I think I'm suited for this in a particular way that keeps me energized.
Is it that you started then visiting prison?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That gentleman who first sat with me in direction, mm-hmm. has a theater background, and he had been a part of a program called Shakespeare Behind Bars at E.C. Brooks. And as he had been sitting with these inmates, working through various acts of different parts of Shakespeare, he just, because he's a director and full of God, he just engaged a lot of these men. And so he started this other program of listening prayer, of group spiritual direction, and then eventually invited me in. Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest, I resisted his invitation for at least a year, if not two. It wasn't on my radar. So it's really important that people understand this movement into justice. In practice, the Spirit will use us wherever we are. And I wasn't ready. I had no ability to imagine why it would be good to go into this prison. And he and I worked in that prison for 2 years, and then he had to move out of state and handed the whole thing over to me. And I want to do this for the rest of my life. It's nothing I could have imagined or understood really until I got in there,
yeah,
and realized these men are more willing and open and vulnerable than any other people group I've been with in the church. Outside of the church, I describe it more like a 12-step group, being able to come beginning in a confessional posture of humility.
Wow.
So I'm my wife knows. We got a lot of things going on, but she's sad that I can't get in there because she knows that it's not that I have to go do this. It's just my favorite place in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that whole resisting, right? Mm-hmm. And not being ready, that is relevant, mm-hmm. at, you know, as far as what this work involves. You know, we work with people who are just not ready, and mm-hmm. you know, they just can't see yet. And but to still honor them and respect mm-hmm. them, and you know, and pray for them and have hope, right? Like we go back to the opening question, you know, having hope that eventually they'll see. And so the fruit of you seeing sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got that from, I think it was Jerry Sitzer's book, Water from a Deep Well, in the introduction, mm-hmm. where he was talking about some sort of community involvement or social action. And he just said, you know, the question, how do we start? Let's just start trying something somewhere. Just do what you can right now. And don't place huge expectations on yourself. And so it's just, if we open just a little bit more to God and God in and through our neighbors and suffering, then we have no idea where the Spirit will take us.
Amen.
Each step after that. So yeah, it's crazy what can happen. My wife grew up MK, PK, early part of her life was in the Philippines. And she said, I'm never going to live someplace cold, and I'm not going to marry a pastor.
Yeah. I'll pray for your wife too. Yeah.
Don't tell God what you're not going to do.
And it's not like, guess what? I got another plan. I'm going to laugh at you. It's really just this other side of grace of, mm-hmm. oh, there's actually something more here that I couldn't imagine right now mm-hmm. in my small way of seeing the world.
So I would say I'm somebody who's been burned by spiritualizing.
Right.
And I've received a lot of joy from contemplative practice. And so I ask this as kind of an ally to the work and not an antagonist, but what's the difference between spiritualizing problems? So mm-hmm. giving spiritual answers to material problems and contemplative work in social justice?
Yeah. Great, great, amazing question. We all at varying levels have been wounded by, if we've been in the church, it's not a matter of if you've been wounded by the church, it's a matter of when. And that wounding, it comes in many varieties. One of the most destructive parts of that would be then the Gnosticism of American culture. Mm-hmm. So to separate body from spirit and to not embrace the incarnational realities of God. So first off, I struggle with the vocabulary of spiritual direction as a title. Mm-hmm. There's other traditions and that of people that practice something similar to what I do that would call it spiritual friendship or companionship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's some that pivot off of the Celtic vocabulary of anamkara, of mm-hmm. a soul friend. I stick with the vocab of spiritual direction because of its long history back mm-hmm. to the 3rd and 4th centuries in the desert, as then translated through especially Ignatius of Loyola and the Carmelites of St. John of the Cross and Teresa Avila. And so the emphatic need then, as I meet with people, is to first say, this is what we were meaning by this. And in practice, what I'm doing is facilitating. I'm not the director here. The Holy Spirit's the director. And so that's some of the clarification just with, you know, some of the insider language of spiritual direction that can be hard for people that have had that wounding. Mm-hmm. So the other parts of this would be the struggle with Gnosticism in our connection with culture. America has such a fraught relationship with the body. And so we need to rediscover the erotic nature of God's love, and that eros is not a sexual fantasy primarily. Eros is the bodily, earthly, time-bound nature of Christ and the fact that God engages that. So we're so afraid of our bodies and we're so not at home in our bodies. And so what happens in that, again, dropping names for the Calvin community. So, you know, Jamie Smith's work, you know, on we are not homo sapien, or we're not sapient beings primarily. He would say we're homo adirons, we're loving beings. And so when we get to the loving and the desiring, then that's where we can especially connect mind and heart. And he goes on to kind of deconstruct that anthropology of a human as a brain on a stick. So I then think of church primarily still as ideas, as merely doctrine, merely locking and loading the right formulas of the church. And it's so hard to, for especially the Reformed community to stop and realize even our movement against Gnosticism is still intellectualized and abstract. Mm-hmm. So therefore, contemplative practice is not going to happen unless it really becomes bodily. And it's crazy how the Buddhists and the world of mindfulness are leading the world in this. Yeah. And I believe in natural revelation. I have no problem reading Thich Nhat Hanh and reading science. There's science underneath this that says we as a culture breathe too much oxygen. Mm-hmm. So what that means is we've developed generations of human beings that take in so much oxygen. And what's that oxygen doing? It's telling our brains, there's a bear coming. You're in danger. Mm-hmm. Why do we breathe so much? Oh, the bees are coming and I got to run. So we come out of the womb predisposed for generational. We're wired up to be anxious. So we think we got to keep going, got to do more, got to be more, got to think more, got to build more, got to spend more, got to earn more. And then Jesus comes and says, enter my Sabbath rest. And we as a church just have no capacity to really understand what that means, because it has to happen in time and in body. So I could go on and on, but there's a little teaser. I'm so excited about that question. My co-director for the School of Contemplative Listening is a third order Franciscan. Her name's Cami Mann. And she has a specialty in trauma-informed practices of spiritual direction. And we're trying to develop some video course material for her, and it's all breath and body work. So she's leading in a practice. It's a 90-minute session of spiritual direction that is all breath and body work. And it's, if you could say this in the spirit, it is hot. She's on to, is on to something. And I can't believe I get to learn with her. So you're nailing one of the core things that I'm working on with this work of translation, to help people realize we can't pray if we don't sleep well, we don't eat well, if we don't stretch our bodies and exercise. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm great at these things, but it's got to be in the conversation.
So if I were to tag on to Libby's question, how are you defining social justice, and how does this contemplative work impact or influence either the way that you conceive of social justice or practice social justice?
Yeah, thank you. As I started working with Cami, and some of you working co-teaching classes and other ways of facilitating. As a matter of fact, Michelle and I are going to collaborate this Sunday at our church, working through the Colossians way on sexual identity. And so sometimes when you bring people together, it's just addition. You know, it's just like, here, you've got this thing, and we're going to work. And but working with Cami, and I hope every human being has this blessed experience. It's multiplication. It's just like, oh my gosh, there's so much here. And so one of the core things that I thought I knew 3 years ago when we started dialoguing what our collaboration would look like has to do with this question you're asking about contemplation and justice. And so We dove into this question of justice. We were both formed at the Dominican Center with the nuns there. And we were trying to create some conversations with other spiritual directors. And we both realized that even the community of spiritual directors, you know, you're talking about a couple decades of different types of people holding this practice in different ways, we realized that there's still some real questions about power context in a listening mm-hmm. conversation, that it's possible even in a listening conversation to presume, and Eric, you're nodding your head because you know this, and as a therapist, it's so easy. Just because I'm being silent doesn't mean I'm manipulating and controlling the room and predicting what this person could or should be thinking. And so as we sat with that, the news about Jean Vanier came out, the founder of L'Arche, a writer and a thinker and a practitioner that I've admired and learned from for a long time. Sexual impropriety is hidden in some really dark, twisted ways. And so we're realizing, oh my gosh, even Jean Vanier, there's a craziness here. So she and I just started thinking, we have to really reintroduce this question of what is safe, what is, and that made us think about questions of holiness. And then as we've walked through that contemplation, is what I define as creating just more space for God. You can think about the Psalms about broad, spacious places, that there's always more. We could turn to C.S. Lewis. You know, when they go into that one shack, I think it's one of the later Chronicles books in the Chronicles of Narnia, the kids go inside and they're like, its insides are bigger than its outsides. So it's just this idea that there's a lot more in me. Thomas Merton said even, you know, I'm not surprised that we made it to the moon. The question is, do we have the capacity to travel the spheres, the galaxies, through the stars, and the universe that's within ourselves? So that's the contemplative practice. It's this second half of life movement of I've prayed this way, I've done church this way, I've worked through these things, and then I've hit these troubles of my adult life, and God's not what I thought God could be. I'm not what I, wait a minute. All right, there has to be more here. There has to be something else. And it's not that I'm leaving my orthodoxy or my Christocentric vision. It's just that I rediscover the depth, height, width, and breadth of what that really means. So that's the contemplation is space. So then as Cammie and I have sat with this and taught on it, thinking about justice as the inevitable intrinsic reality that must be connected to contemplation. So what is oppression? It is pressing down and squeezing and limiting the dignity of a human being. I use the illustration of growing carrots. If you've ever tried to grow carrots, one of the things carrots and other kinds of root vegetables need is really fluffy soil that has lots of not too much clay. If you plant carrots and try to grow them in a really hard packed soil, you're going to get this gnarled knuckle thing, and it's not going to grow very long. It's not probably going to be very tasty. It's going to be stalky and woody. So for a carrot to flourish, it needs space, it needs fluffy soil. So a human being to flourish to its full dignity, likewise, justice has to come in to create that space for a human to flourish. So we attempt to hope for this with our kids in school, spacious places to blossom and flourish. And then it's so ironic that the church ends up becoming a constricting place. Mm-hmm. And that's understandable for the first half of life. We want to catechize our kids. We want them to know the doctrine. What I'm discerning here is that the trouble with this integration between contemplation and justice, the reason why we can't hook up to this in the church is that we're still functioning through our doctrine in a first half of life kind of pressure. So in the School of Prayer, the second year we did it, I had a cohort of mostly all pastors, people you all would know, and we met in Grand Rapids, and they were the rawest group of humans I've hung out with outside of the prison. As Brené Brown would say, it's going to be some praying and some cussing.
Sounds like my family.
So the issue of justice then is like, do I have the space to actually ask questions, mm-hmm. to wrestle? Yeah. Or do I just have to show up and salute to my congregation, salute to the cross, salute to Jesus? Mm-hmm. And so what I've been trying to say to, it started really with, you know, a junior or a senior in college that would show up in my, like a one-on-one at the coffee shop or my office, and they'd be saying, you know, I just don't know if I believe in God anymore. And I'd sit and listen. I'd realize, you know, they had this one experience of their youth pastor, their parents, their local church, and they hadn't been introduced to the liberal arts before. And now they're seeing beauty and wisdom and truth and the sciences and the arts and all these larger contexts. And they just haven't done the integration to figure out, what do those questions mean over here and over here? And the civic questions and the politics and the psychological and the, you know, so that's what I'm a lot of what I get to do these days as a director is create space for pastors to wrestle. Mm-hmm. So contemplation, justice, I like social justice, but really what Cami and I are coming down to is we're talking about the character of God here. Mm-hmm. So social justice comes out of that. Mm-hmm. Yes. When we talk about holiness, you could translate, you know, righteousness as justice. So we're talking about imago Dei, and justice in a social way, and the activist comes out of that. But a lot of people misunderstand me when I start talking about justice. I'm not just talking about CRT here or whatever. Maybe that's what we need to talk about, but this is deeper.
Is it that you can go to church now? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I have the gift of, I discovered more of a charismatic practice when I was in high school, and I was a part of Vineyard churches before I got to Hope. And that was such a wonderful community that raised me in my younger years through college, that I didn't actually get cynical or struggle with bitterness, and I wasn't jaded about the church until I got to seminary, which I waited till my middle 20s to do. And I actually went to Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia, because I just needed to be in a different context for these conversations. So with that, I would say that I love the local church. I love it dearly. All that I'm hoping for with contemplative practice is to normalize these things in the local church. That doesn't mean it's easy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of my practice in the local church is for my kids and for my community, socially, because I'm an introvert, what it does is it forces me to continue to engage people that I wouldn't otherwise engage. I'm just going to be a contemplative and go over here and have my little mystical, quiet navel gaze. No, to really flesh out contemplative practice, it needs to be in relationships with people that don't necessarily understand me or even want to. So, and then I also have the unique privilege of having a great church. We've struggled with a lot of hard things at Maple Avenue in the last 5-6 years, but it's a church that's committed to the cross, the gospel, in a way that comes out practically into the street, into the neighborhood, with an emphasis on healing racism. And we've got a long history of that. So I don't think I could go to a church right now that didn't actively have some people of color and a definite mission to engage and to keep growing in that area. So that's another part of the survival skill.
I really resonate with a lot of what you're saying and some of what I and the people that I work with are dealing with. So I feel like when you work in justice-oriented work with people that may be oppressed, there is this, like, we carry burdens for people, and then we start bearing those burdens in our bodies and our spirits. And so I'm noticing this trend among my people, who, my friends that are working in ministry, specifically ministry that is tied to social justice, that they've been getting spiritual directors because, and I'm noticing this in myself too, is because we've been feeling this loss of connection. Like, I feel disconnected mm-hmm. with myself and my connection to God sometimes. And I'm just wondering, so my question is, for people that are feeling that way, mm-hmm. I feel like there's a little bit of a difference between pastoral care and definitely. A spiritual direction. I'd like to talk more. I like you to talk more about why that might be more necessary, or what kind of people really benefit from this sort of contemplative practice.
Yeah. I'll answer that first. I want to tell a little story about, I've been getting to know some, spiritual directors in the South Side of Chicago, pastors, Black pastors, who are practicing spiritual direction. And I don't meet very many lead pastors anywhere that traffic in the vocab of contemplative spirituality or spiritual direction. So to know that Dr. Daryl Griffin at the Oakdale Evangelical Covenant Church on the South Side, getting to know him, and then the Reverend Dr. Deborah Penny. She's been working through North Park Seminary in the Joliet prison. She's an amazing person. So when I sat down with them, asking them what the primary role of spiritual direction is for their communities, they said, healing trauma. Mm. So I just about, you know, passed out. All the various interweavings, the spirit, all that I'm learning with Cami, and then coming full circle here. And so I so much hope that you can continue to learn what this means. I feel like I'm just in the cusp of trying to understand what this means. So in terms of the local church, and my training at Fuller was set up by Gary Moon, who's a clinical a therapist, and so a PhD in clinical psych, who's saying spiritual direction is really the vocab we should be moving toward, but yet also trying to understand pastoral care in that. So there is an overlap. We had a Venn diagram between these things, and it would also overlap depending on the practitioner and their formation. So you might be able to find a Christian therapist who does practice like a spiritual direction, or even has formation in that. That would be like Chuck DeGroat here at Western Seminary, wears both hats. Now in the pastoral, the traditional pastoral model, this is also part of what I'm trying to champion in a hopeful, not a condescending, critical way, that where are the soul shepherds at the local church level? We've got lots of different models of what pastoral leadership looks like. Great teachers, great theologians, great organizational team builders, visionaries. But the fundamental definition of pastoral work, and my understanding of the scriptures, is soul care and being able to do something like spiritual direction. So I've done some podcasting with the Dominican Center on this very question of what does contemplative practice look like in the local church? And folks can find those episodes.
this is so up my alley, soul care and contemplative work. And I use some contemplative work in the work that I do as I'm consulting others on, you know, how to become more aware of the patterns they have that continue to oppress, you know, people, right? And so what is that like for you to it? And sometimes pastors can't, you know, not just pastors, you know, a lot of us, we can't see, you know, what we're doing. And we want to make it seem like we've got it all together. We've got the answers, right? Yeah. What is that like for you doing this work with that, you know, with people with that posture?
Yeah. I'm going to stretch my answer to a larger question here. Willie James Jennings.
Oh, yes.
At Yale is probably the most important voice that's alive today that I'm paying attention to. And so as an artistic, creative, young kid who grew up on a farm, my dad, more of an intellectual, is a farmer as well. I grew up around a farm, had all these creative urges, very sensitive, intense ADHD, and also identify with HSP, highly sensitive person. So I just feel everything in the room, taking in what's happening with others, and it can wreck me. So it's hard to know what a man is in our culture. So, you know, Kristen DeMay's work on Jesus and John Wayne is a part of this prophetic movement to look at this, the tropes for masculinity that we've championed. And so that's working itself out in maybe not quite explicitly with the Me Too with everyone, but this podcast, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, I could only listen to the first episode of that podcast because it triggered so much pain in my history of working for the church. I'm so glad it's being documented. But so I'm just going to say, to answer your question, I'm still working through it. It's still really hard on a daily. And I think that's part of the reason why I love going to the prison. Is when I don't know what to do with the local church at large or with the largely patriarchal model of leadership in the church that Jennings would say is a pedagogy of the plantation.
Yes.
That values mastery, control, and possession. Most folks are not going to be ready to do that. You know, I tried to respond to that by working through a book a friend of mine from college put out, Reparations, a Christian Call for Repentance and Repair by Duke Kwan and Gregory Thompson. I went to college with Greg. And I got through to chapter 4 on that book, trying to bring in other vocational learning partners. And it's easy to get center left people for that stuff, right? So I just didn't want to do that. I wanted a larger conversation. And I brought in my conservative friend, and it was awful. It was awful. And we're still deeply committed to each other. But there's just an example of somebody that I'm that committed to in friendship. When he sits down as a scholar behind a microphone with me, he's presenting in a different way than he does with me if we're sitting by a fire with a glass of bourbon. You know, so I'm just like, oh my gosh, what's going on?
Yeah.
So there's so many layers of patience and deference, and some of us will have to choose to step away. I'm following Jamar Tisby's podcast with Tyler Burns, and I really, really value the leave loud honesty. It's the battered wife, honestly. There's just only so much some of us can take. So that's fine. Some of us will then respond in a prophetic mode and have a very public way of calling out the institutions and the darkness. And then some of us will have this longer obedience of pastoral witness. And I feel called between the prophetic and the pastoral. I want to be patient and kind. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be afraid to point out things, but I also don't want to make this about me and my power, because I'm just a white dude still trying to figure this out. It'd be kind of cliche for me to suddenly become such a warrior that I'm pushing the button. I'm losing friends. Do you guys know, you know, whatever, Josh, you're so privileged. Just shut up. And so what I'm trying to do mostly is just listen and create space for others that I can learn with.
This has been a lovely conversation. I feel like it's almost like a mini retreat, right? Sitting around the fireplace, whether it's bourbon or root beer or tea or beer or something, but it seems like we just sat down in front of the fireplace. Everybody has their beverage of choice. We hear the fire crackling, and the conversation is just about ready. It is just getting ready to get really, really deep. I appreciate this kind of feeling right now. It's like, wow, we've started. It's good. Gotten comfortable and pulled out the chair, started the fire, have our beverage of choice. We've pressed our app and the kids are all taken care of. Kids are taken care of. The dogs have been walked. And anything that needs to be done for any preps for the next day have already been taken care of. And so now it's like, let's just breathe, you know, breathing into this. So thank you for even enlarging the space of our conversation on this podcast, and for this team and for our listeners as well. And for our team and for our listeners, if you are wanting to go deeper in your own journey into these, to really explore this contemplative practice, would recommend spiritual direction, or if you want to call it, you know, spiritual buddies or something else, I would recommend that to you. I would also recommend some of these formative practices, these schools that Josh is organizing. It's intriguing. Full disclosure, I'm signing up for the School of Prayer if Josh doesn't kick me out when I tell him the dates that I can't make it. It's like, I really want to be there. I don't want to be the problem child. But
no such thing in the School of Prayer. We call it a failure lab.
Well, good. I'm glad.
It's a place for identifying our resistances to God, not to perform some sort of spiritual masculinity. Look at me, I'm fasting. So we're trying to be an antidote to the pedagogy plantation.
Praise God. And podcast people, you'll probably hear more about that as the journey kicks off fairly soon for that. But it was intriguing because I think it will be something that will be helpful for me in my victory lap year here at work and other types of transitions that are happening in life, right? So creating space for God to really speak into what's next as opposed to me saying, oh, I'm good at this. Mm-hmm. People say I can do this. People are inviting me to do this. But what if I just sat with some people more intentionally, contemptively, and just say, open my heart up more for that. So I would invite you to listen to Josh's podcast, The Invitation. Go to the website. We'll put the website link in the show notes so that you can just explore more of that. If you feel that there's some wrestling still in your spirit, if there's this tension between who you know, well, let me rephrase that. If there's this tension between what you believe God is saying is possible and you're understanding what the next step is to get there, or if there are wounds that are festering and you're trying your best to understand the source of that wounds and why those wounds won't heal, as try as you might, this might be a path for you. And I want to encourage you, and especially for our anti-racist advocates, educators, we got some wounds, people. We got some wounds. And sometimes it's hard to find the space to heal from our wounds because we're so busy tending to the wounds of other people, especially to the wounds of people who just found out that they were hit, right? It's like, we know we've been hit. Which scar you want to see? We know that, and we just keep pushing on. But for some people who didn't think this was a thing, and then they got wounded, and then we find ourselves helping them to realize, yeah, no, you got hit. No, it's not the end, but we pour so much into other people that sometimes it's hard to prioritize making room for ourselves so we can hear God speak to our hearts and provide healing for us. So I highly recommend that to you all. Well, our friends, thank you so much for sharing and spending this time with us. It has been a pleasure to be on this journey with you. Josh, thank you so much for being with us and, again, helping us to create more space and the privilege of asking questions and hearing answers from someone who's been on this journey, too. We thank you so much. To our listeners, if you like this show, please like and subscribe. Send it to a friend. Say, hey, you got to listen to this. This is really good. Write a review. We love to hear that on wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you listen to this too. But until we meet again next time, want to encourage you to keep the faith and keep fighting for justice. This has been the Antioch Podcast.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. You can help us by spreading the word about the Antioch Podcast by sharing this episode on your favorite social media platform and by leaving us a review on our Facebook page or Apple Podcasts. Your shares and reviews really help us reach more people with the message of biblical anti-racism. Thanks.